This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, January 18th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear about a program to inform parents about fentanyl, opioids, and overdose reversals happening tomorrow night. Wyoming researchers are taking to the air to look after the health of pronghorn sheep. Chris Moore is out this week and the next, but we will have the latest edition of Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars. A commentary from Jim Hightower is at the bottom of the hour. Then Joe Yuhas sits down with Rabbi Fred Green of Boulder's congregation Har Hashem. At 9:30, Sam Fuqua takes us on a tour of the To Have and to Hoard exhibit, now open at the Boulder Public Library's downtown branch. At 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
A winter storm has closed numerous schools, businesses, and government offices today as weather officials predict a winter storm will dump several inches of snow across the Denver metro and foothill regions. Schools that announced cancellations yesterday evening include those in Denver, Jeffco, Aurora, and the Boulder and St. Vrain Valley school districts. The campuses of the University of Colorado and the Colorado School of Mines are also closed today. As of 6 a.m. this morning, airlines at Denver International Airport had canceled 262 flights and delayed 36 flights. Denver officials announced Monday that the city is planning on plowing side streets, with crews making one pass down the center of each side street. The Denver plow pledge comes after residents criticized Denver for not clearing snow from side streets following the late December snowstorm. Denver officials say they were caught off guard by an incorrect forecast and prolonged cold temperatures. Colorado launched on Tuesday the parent application process for the state's new universal free preschool program, which begins in the fall. Funds for the program come from a voter-approved nicotine tax. The new pre-K program will provide at least 15 hours per week of free voluntary preschool for four-year-olds, some three-year-olds with qualifying factors, and some five-year-olds who are too young to enter kindergarten. Some families may be eligible for additional hours of free preschool based on income and other criteria. The online application system for families is available at upk.colorado.gov and is available in English, Spanish, and Arabic. The first application window ends February 14th, with families finding out the program match for their child around March 17th. Governor Jared Polis gave his State of the State address Tuesday, in which he emphasized priorities for affordable housing during a significant portion of his speech. Other priorities for the governor include health care affordability and tax relief. In a press release after the address, the Colorado Fiscal Institute said the governor's call for cuts to the state income tax rate is a disappointment because such cuts disproportionately benefit corporations and the wealthy at the expense of social services. Polis also read the names of those killed during the Club Q shooting in Colorado Springs and called for an expansion to the state's Extreme Risk Protection Order, or the Red Flag Law, to allow district attorneys to pursue interventions against those who are at risk to others or themselves. Polis said he wants to put an end to untraceable ghost guns, but did not announce Democrat proposals such as raising the minimum age to buy guns and potentially banning assault weapons. The Transportation Security Administration said on Tuesday agents at the Denver International Airport seized 156 firearms from carry-on luggage last year, a record-setting amount for the airport and an increase of 15 guns from the year prior, or 2021. Although there was an increase, DIA's nationwide ranking dropped from 6th to 7th. The Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport took the top spot in 2022 for the most gun seizures, with agents seizing 448 firearms. According to the Denver Post, while gun interception dipped during the pandemic at the nation's airport, it had increased by 48% since 2019. Aurora Councilperson Juan Marcano has announced his intent to run for mayor. The announcement came during a joint press conference with five other Democrats seeking seats on Aurora City Council. Current Councilperson Allison Coombs for Ward 5 says she's vying for an at-large seat. Other candidates include Pastor Thomas Mays for an at-large seat, anti-gang activist Jason McBride for Ward 4, community organizer Chris Rose for Ward 5, and attorney Brian Matisse for Ward 6. According to the Aurora Sentinel, the Aurora City Council is technically nonpartisan, but critical city council decisions have become hyperpartisan and polarizing in recent years as registered Republicans carry a 6-4 majority on the city council. Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman, who nearly won his seat in 2019, said he will run for a second term during a TV interview in December, but has not made an official announcement. Boulder County officials announced last week the county plans on dispersing $1.8 million in opioid settlement money to 25 local programs. As part of the disbursement, county officials will hire a new opioid case manager for the Boulder County Jail and new harm reduction staff at Boulder County Public Health. The money will also fund new investigation equipment for the Boulder County Sheriff's Office. According to the Longmont Leader, the settlement funds result from nationwide lawsuits with opioid distributors and manufacturers and will be distributed over an 18-year timeline with $1.8 million for year one. For today's weather, the National Weather Service is keeping its winter storm warning in effect until 5 p.m. this afternoon. The agency says additional snow accumulations will be between 2 to 5 inches. Winds could gust as high as 20 to 25 miles per hour. Today's highs are expected to reach 30 degrees for Denver, 31 for Boulder, and 34 degrees for Fort Collins. For tonight, snow could continue in the early evening hours. Otherwise, skies will be mostly cloudy and gradually becoming clear for Denver and Boulder. Winds are expected to remain blustery this evening for Fort Collins. Tonight's lows will be 9 degrees for Fort Collins, 13 degrees for Denver, and 14 degrees for Boulder. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Fentanyl and opioids have been reaching record high overdose rates in recent years. Tomorrow night at Monarch High School, the Parent Engagement Network will be holding an information session about the facts and myths about fentanyl and how opioids affect the brain. Joining me now, I have Paula Nelson, Program Director and Co-Founder of the Parent Engagement Network, and Trina Fates, Peer Recovery Coach and Facilitator for Boulder County Substance Use Advisory Group, aka the SWAG. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us here.
Thanks, Shannon.
So you have this event happening January 19th, Thursday, January 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Monarch High. Tell us a bit more about it.
Well, Shannon, as you know, you can hardly open a newspaper or turn on the TV without seeing something about fentanyl. And one of Penn's four key initiatives is about drug and alcohol education of parents and youth. And we have had the opportunity over the past 6 years to work with Trina Fates on doing presentations to educate our community, because we all need to come together around what's happening in our community and to really understand that this isn't just something that's happening across the nation and to others, it's happening here. And we have the opportunity to educate these parents and to provide some Narcan training. So hopefully we can also save lives. And I'm going to have Trina tell you a little bit more about the speakers that we'll have at this presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Paula Nelson. Trina Fates, please go ahead.
So as Paula mentioned, fentanyl is in our communities, and there's no escaping that, no matter how hard we try. So education is the best prevention, and that's what we're finding across the board. We are losing too many young people, but we're also losing a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, as well as in their 50s and 60s. What we are seeing mostly is that fentanyl has hit the illicit street drug market, but it could be in anything. And so we really want to make parents aware. That's the number one thing we've heard from parents who have lost a child over and over again. I had no idea this was out there. I had no idea what to do. I had no idea this was a threat. So we feel that the speakers will bring about a source of community. We will have a couple of young adults who are in recovery, one who is working in the field as an addiction counselor, and also we'll do an endorphin brain demonstration that she does in the high school classrooms here at BVSD to show us just how easy it is for the brain to be affected by fentanyl. And that this is not just about moral failings. This is more about what is happening as a disorder in the brain. We'll also have Avani Dilger from Natural Highs speaking about what she's hearing from youth and what alternatives there are, as well as her group, Natural Highs for Teens. We will have an addiction physician who will tell us a little bit more about how medication-assisted treatment works on the brain and why it's so successful and why there is a higher success rate from that than any other form of treatment. And then we will have myself talk about the myths and the facts that we know about fentanyl, why it's out there, and where we are seeing it.
Paula Nelson, you mentioned Narcan training. What exactly is that, and how does it play into a strategy of harm reduction?
I'm going to actually have Trina share that with you, because she and one of our other presenters are the ones that do this training, and so I think she's more.
All right. Trina Fates.
So naloxone is the prescription drug that is the antidote or reversal to an opioid overdose. It only works for an opioid overdose, but it's a very simple tool. We know that first, second, and third graders are being trained how to use this in other states because of the dangers and risks to siblings and parents. So it's something that everyone should know how to use, that the United States Attorney General has suggested everyone carry. So we want to be able to get this out to people. We want them to know how to use it, and we want to explain how they're protected under the law for any type of use to reverse an overdose with this.
Another harm reduction strategy that I've seen, at least just kind of going out to fairs, I believe it was at possibly a CDPHE, a Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment booth at a festival that I went to, is giving away of fentanyl testing strips. How do those work?
So test strips are fairly easy to use, we recommend using them, but on the other hand, you could get a false negative. So I urge all people who are recreationally using drugs or regularly using drugs that don't know if there's fentanyl in their drugs to test, because if they get a positive, they know there's fentanyl there, and I suggest they not use that drug unless they have a high tolerance to fentanyl. But the fact that you could have a false negative worries me, so I always tell kids the most important thing to do is, if you didn't pick up that drug from the pharmacy yourself, you must have a designated non-user, because the five people who died in Commerce City last spring, all five of them passed away so quickly there was no one there to help them. If they had tested their drug, they would have known there was fentanyl in it. Yes.
Paula Nelson, are there any lessons that the Parent Engagement Network, your co-founder, it's been around for 20 years, mm-hmm. are there any lessons that may have been learned from the outcomes of the Just Say No campaign and the DARE scare of the 1990s that helped to inform education of parents in the 2020s?
I have to say that those programs didn't really prove to be very effective. And so really what it's about is us coming together as a community for parents to become as educated as they can around what's happening, and knowing signs and symptoms, and knowing what to do if they do see something happen. And when we come together in community, we all have a little piece of the answer, right? And we can talk about and share, and that community building is really what enables us to have some effect on what's happening in our own community, because otherwise we're just in a silo and feeling like, you know, this is just me feeling alone and afraid, and that has never been helpful for any parent, including myself, when it comes to these really scary topics like drugs and alcohol.
I want to thank my guest today. Paula Nelson is Program Director and Co-Founder of Parent Engagement Network. Trina Fates is a facilitator for Boulder County Substance Use Advisory Group. They will be part of a presentation that is taking place Thursday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Monarch High School. The name of the presentation is The Facts and Myths About Fentanyl and Opioids. Where can listeners find out more information should they...
You can go
so
to parentengagementnetwork.org. And if you go to our website, right on the front page, there will be a way to RSVP for the event. We'll definitely let people, if they just come in without registering, that is fine. But we appreciate an RSVP because that helps us to know how many people were to expect.
Well, thanks to you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
Across the West, bighorn sheep are at risk of catching pneumonia. The illness can kill off herds and throw off entire ecosystems. Wyoming researchers are currently monitoring a Jackson herd, and they're taking to the air to look after the health of the sheep. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KHOL's Hannah Merzbach reports.
A helicopter flies above the snowy open hills in the Grovant Wilderness in Teton County. Researchers like Allison Cordemanch are capturing big horned sheep.
This time of year, they should be in their best body condition coming out of the summer and the fall.
She's one of the many researchers with the Wyoming Game and Fish Department out here on this frigid winter morning. Pilots are tracking down nearby sheep, which have GPS collars. Crew shoot down a net, and one member, called a mugger, jumps out of the helicopter, binds a bighorn's legs together, and blindfolds it. Cordemanch says this keeps the sheep relatively calm as it dangles on a rope below the helicopter. It's flown back to the researchers in hills nearby, where they take measurements before releasing the sheep back to the wild.
So we're looking at the amount of fat that they have on their body to get an idea of how well they did through the summer.
Cordemanch and other biologists gather this data before and after the winter to see how the habitat is impacting the Jackson herd.
6'11", 34, 30.
First we put it on the scale so we can get body weight and then bring it over to be processed on the mat.
That's Ben Regan, a research scientist holding down one of the squirming female sheep.
And we start off by getting a temperature, and that way we can see if the sheep is hot, if the chase time might have been a little bit longer.
As the helicopter flies overhead, Regan uses an ultrasound to measure fat on the sheep. Then he checks to see if she's lactating, to see if she has a lamb. Next comes the tonsil and nasal swabs.
Basically, we're able to look at what pathogens they have that might possibly lead to pneumonia, which is a big disease that affects wild sheep in the West.
There used to be about 2 million bighorn sheep in North America. The National Wildlife Federation says now there are less than 100,000 of them. Cordemanch says this is largely due to pneumonia, which was introduced by domestic sheep. Wildlife scientist Kevin Monteith is with the University of Wyoming. He says die-offs from pneumonia happen when the population is reaching its carrying capacity in the local habitat.
When we reach those high levels of abundance, that can be tied to animals that are competing for food, which means poor nutritional condition, which means kind of one more layer that they're contending with when you add their efforts to contend with pathogens at the same time.
The last herd die-off was a decade ago, and the researchers worry it's due for another. Recently, the herd had over 500 sheep, a high for the group. So in the fall, the Game and Fish Department issued limited hunting permits for the female sheep for the first time. Researchers predict that by reducing the population, the herd will become healthier with more food to go around, and they'll be able to fight off the illness.
And so this population is very large right now. It's near that historic abundance where we often see those crashes. And so we've been sort of waiting, wondering if we're going to see it and if we're going to actually observe that.
At the recent Jackson capture, the researchers didn't sound the alarm, but they are seeing red flags. More lambs have been dying of pneumonia, and the sheep have slightly lower levels of body fat, which has been on the decline for the last few years. Monteith says it's still too soon to know if reducing the herd has had any impact.
The reality is it just simply takes time.
But this herd is thriving compared to another group of bighorns that traverses cliffs nearby in the Tetons. Those sheep have received heightened attention in recent years as development restricts migration patterns, which some environmentalists say is threatening their health. Allison Cordemange with the Game and Fish Department manages both the Jackson and the Teton herd.
You have one herd that's almost doing too well and that we need to kind of reduce the population numbers. And then we have another herd like the Tetons that's struggling and not doing very well. So we do very different management depending on, you know, what's going on with that specific population.
Researchers will reassess the population of the Jackson herd in February and then decide if they should issue even more hunting permits. But today, the captured bighorn sheep get to return to the wild.
So we're about to release them back onto the hillside.
The biologists carry a female sheep over to the nearby hill, remove her blindfold, and untie her legs. And within a few seconds, she takes off through the snow, ready to brave the winter ahead. Hannah Merzbach, KHOL News.
Time now for the latest edition of Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about foot care. You know, all it takes is a little tiny thing going on with a little toe or nail to make us feel miserable. Our feet support us, they ground us, and connect us to the earth we stand upon. And I don't think we always give enough attention to them. On an emotional level, they represent our foundation, our security, and inner strength. And they bear the weight of our entire bodies for about the 1,500 times we walk every mile. So we know that our feet contains over 7,000 nerve endings, 26 bones, or 1/4 of all the bones in our body. So we really should pay a little more attention. So when we've been asleep all night, rather than jumping up and putting all your weight on your feet, it could be a good idea to flex your feet and make circles with your feet and get the circulation going before you jump out of bed. So unfortunately, feet are often a low priority to the attention we give our bodies. It's a good idea to stand with weight balanced on both feet rather than all our weight being just put on one side. Of course, many of us choose shoes that are poor fitting, narrow toes and high heels, although I can't imagine KGNU listeners will still do that. But no wonder women are more prone to foot problems. It's best to buy shoes later on during the day because our feet tend to expand during the day. And when you try them on, wiggle your toes to make sure they're roomy enough. I'm a big believer in wearing natural fiber socks. And you might want to, of course, take your shoes off when you enter your house. Synthetic shoes don't have ample ventilation. And same with synthetic socks, they can actually make us more prone to fungus like athlete's feet. You know, by my desk, I have these really cool footsie rollers. So while I'm working on the computer, I roll my feet. I'm giving myself a foot massage because I know you've all seen those reflexology charts that show that every part of our foot corresponds to a different part of the body. Like, for example, the big toe corresponds to the head. And a lovely thing to do to yourself or trade with a partner is foot massage. What a nice way to relax you. And I know we've all been hearing about the importance of earthing and getting our bare feet on the ground. I've even been doing this on the snow. Said to be really good for your immune system. And I think it makes you less susceptible to the cold weather. So take care of your feet because they hold you up. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's a wrap for today's Snowy Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, Alexis Kenyon, Hannah Merzbach, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for a conversation with Rabbi Fred Green, and then a tour of the To Have and To Hoard exhibit at the Boulder Public Library. That's just after the latest commentary from Jim Hightower.